Welcome back to another episode of Nerding Out with Victor. Today, I'm joined again by Warren. Welcome back, Warren.
Hey, Victor. How you doing, mate?
Good. So, last time I had you on, we quickly realized that this was going to be a two-part episode. There were way too much stuff to cover that we even before hitting the record button, we realized that, right?
Yeah, there was a bit of discussion before, and they were like, oh boy, there's some more to chat about.
Yeah, and the last episode was not even your focus or area of expertise. This was more like a side thing you do on the side. But today, we're going to talk about what you actually like to do for a living your focus.
My true passion.
Your true passion, indeed. And that is to do physical pen testing, COVID entry, right? Or how would you define it?
I don't know how I define it. It has lots of names, doesn't it? Black teaming, covert physical entry, social engineering, smash and grab. I don't really know. Like, define it how it, you know, I'm the guy that breaks in your buildings, and then I'll try and get access to your network. And yeah, that's me.
And so it's usually a multi-stage attack, right? It's not just like, oh, you broke a lock and now you're done. Because that's usually, that's not the engagement, right? That's just a means to an end.
Yeah, it's never about just getting in the building. And that's something that I want to try and chat about in this.
Yes.
But yeah, it's not just getting in the building. It's about the impact of having someone in your building.
Yeah.
And if I break into a building and there's no one in it, and there's no network, then what have I gained? Like, you know?
Right. So let's talk about that. Like, how does your regular engagement look like? What are people hiring you to do? Let's maybe start there.
I don't know why they hire me. I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't hire me. So I think they tend to be a little bit more of a drive to trying to scare their board members to say, yeah, this is doable, to get budget. As you usually see, like, oh, some crazy guy from PTP has just broken in and we need to get budget to actually change stuff, right?
Mm.
And your engagement, like a general engagement, goes over like a few different phases. You've got your OSIN, so just advanced Googling, basically. Just Google that out of the company. Yeah, so open source intelligence gathering. And basically you go, okay, I am targeting company A. I need to learn everything about company A. I want to know where headquarters are, what it looks like. And you build up a picture about what that building looks like. And then you go on site and you go, right, first things first, I need to confirm what I know. And is it actually true? Like, is there suddenly, you know, there's scaffolding on the building this week or something, you know, it changes. So you need to confirm that. And then you just work on a way in. So you just sort of start watching people, trying to gauge what they look like, what people wear, where their badges are, how they act, where the client is. Like, you know, in London, for example, you get like a skyscraper. Generally, the company doesn't own the entire building.
Right.
So you like, look at where they are in the building. And yeah, just trying to, I aim to emulate a member of staff because these buildings are meant to let people in. They're meant to let the right people in. So you just want to be one of those right people, right?
So what's your go-to? Like, who do you like to impersonate?
I like to impersonate me. I don't use a fake name or anything like that. Because, I can always imagine a bad thing where, like, if you were walking away from someone and somebody was to come out, oh, Tony, and you don't turn around because Tony's not your name. That's really hard to explain away. It's easier to lie when it's founded on truth.
Stories to kind of like, or personas to bear in mind. Yeah.
So I go as Warren and I come from IT is usually my thing because I look like someone that works in IT. Like, look at me. I look like a stereotypical IT guy, right? So that's what I go for. And it gives me, it's a nice cover story to give me access to, or give me a reason to look at your computer generally, give me a reason to be in the data center, that sort of thing. Mm. But I tend to not, I don't like talking to people if I can get away with it on site. And there's, yeah, I don't, like, social engineering should always be a backup, but it should never be your sort of first thing you do.
Right. All right. So you're hired by this company to basically say, how good is my physical security? And that is essentially a means to an end to plug in some kind of device on their network to basically bypass all their perimeter security, right? That's usually the game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like you've invested X thousands on firewalls and EDR and all IPS and everything like that. But if I can walk in and literally plug in, or like some people like are not even interested in you accessing the network, like how much of impact to a bank would there be of you walking into their data center and sticking an axe through all their stock trading servers?
Right.
Like, that's arguably a bigger impact. So sometimes it's just getting access is what they're interested in, because they're like, look, you just being in that room is a risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that obviously varies a lot depending on what kind of building you're going into, right? So if you're in central London and trying to get into a shared office building versus going into a data center with like man traps and whatnot, that's a very, very different engagement, right?
Absolutely.
And if I mean, I'm sure people who are listening have been to sophisticated data centers. Like I've been to DCs where like there are like two man traps to even get into the building, right? And like, you're not going to talk your way in there, probably.
No. I mean, even if you're meant to be in there, you probably can't like explain away why you need to be in there. Like I like to think of it, and a few of my like colleagues and stuff like that, there are three types of building in this world. There's buildings like normal offices. They're built to let people in. It just happens to be the right people. Right?
Yeah.
Built to let people in. A data center is built to keep people out. People don't need to be in a data center. Right. Only computers need to be in a data center. You're just built to keep people out. And then you've got prisons. It's built to keep people from leaving, you know? And it's, there are probably more, and maybe a paraphrasing. I'm sure some of my mates were like, oh, we didn't mention this. But like, you know what I mean? So a data center is a completely different ball game than an office building in London.
Yeah.
That's, you tend to need sort of cyber assistance on that. Because there's like almost like a staged attack to get into a data center. First, you need to be able to actually be allowed, almost be allowed into the data center, because no one's going to just let you in.
You can't talk your way in there.
You can't talk your way in. Like, it's bloody difficult. Like, I know people are hack, but it's not something you should plan for, in my opinion.
Right.
There's stuff like card cloning and stuff like that, which is, I mean, I've got a lot of. I like card cloning. We can go into that.
We're going to talk about that at length later. But yes.
I know you interviewed Iceman a few months ago.
Yeah.
Iceman's weird. Love Iceman. And so card cloning is obviously going to be a thing that you would have to maybe employ for a data center, because you can just let yourself into a data center. You still have a bit of an issue about, because there's generally like a key box usually in a data center, but like keys for different network cabinets and whatever. We've all seen them. It's a different ball game. A data center is an entirely different beast.
Yeah. So. All right. Let's talk about more like an office building then. So like, you done your recon, you know, like what you're dealing with, you know, you're going to the right building to start with, right? That's an important caveat.
Make sure you break into the right place. First and foremost.
So you rock up, you kind of, you dress the part, you look like somebody from IT. You go to the receptionist is the first gatekeeper, most likely, right?
Usually, yeah. So I tend to try and avoid the reception, because the receptionist is usually the most dangerous person in that building, seconded to maybe the PA of some high board member. You get the receptionist, they've got a level of power without being in charge, right? They are the first, like you say, the first gatekeeper, and they have that power. They allow people into their building, and they're generally very dangerous on a social engineering engagement or like a physical compromise. If there's a back door, I will always choose the back door rather than go to the reception. Sometimes you can't do that, because like London, for example, generally it's multi-occupancy and you've got one big reception on the ground floor or something.
Yeah.
At that point, you've got to go through past the reception and hope to God that they don't look at you. But then...
Do you tailgate then? Is that your first plan of attack?
I don't. Like a tailgate for me is a non-persistent attack. My objective is always to get persistence into that building.
Right.
So I can come and go into that building as and when I want. And my objective personally is, well, how does everyone else get into that building? Mm. Like I look at that, how do everyone else get in that building? And generally it's a card, right? That's where I've spent too many years looking at access control systems, how they work. I know like how they work the full system. I know, like, generally, I'm not going to say I'm some sort of genius, but, like, yeah. I understand how an access control system works. I understand a lot of different card techs. And that's what I specialize in, identifying what card tech they are using in a covert manner and trying to work out what card tech they use based on the readers, based on what they look like, you know, where they are, if it's HF, LF, whatever. But that's, then I would target that to get me access. If that doesn't work, say they're using some crazy expensive, you know, HID SEOS with custom keys and all this jazz, then I'm going to have to tailgate, because it's not going to be clonable in any realistic manner.
Let's go back to the scenario where things are clonable, right? So imagine you have some kind of gate, which is what you'll see in most office spaces, right? Or most semi-sophisticated office spaces, right? There's some kind of gate with RFID badges, right? Yep. So you know what the part should look like. Your IT, you want to get into the building. Probably the target you're going after tend to be something related to IT as well, right? You're not going into, like, finance buildings that you're going, like, right? So probably going to be looking like the part, right?
Yeah, so generally every company has an IT department.
Yeah.
Especially in 2025. I've broken into a lot of banks, a lot of tech firms, a lot, you know, a few government buildings, stuff like that. And they've all got an IT department. Like, yeah. There's no reason you're like, I wouldn't break in wearing a hoodie. I've never broken in wearing a hoodie, especially like a Squid Game on it. But like, it's you need to measure what they look like. Like, for example, I broke into a building last week. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was in an engagement last week and I broke into a building. They were wearing casual, but like smarter than a hoodie. So they wore like polo shirts and jeans for the vibe. I wore polo shirt and jeans. It's because you need to be, there's the gray man mentality. I mean, if anyone hasn't read that, there's a gray man, there's a whole blog post online. If you search gray man, it's brilliant.
Okay.
You almost want to blend into the background. You want to be visible, but invisible.
Right.
And you don't want to stand out.
Right.
And that's why you have to just judge what everyone else is wearing and do that.
Right. Okay. So you now look the part, you know what entry system they're using. Is your first port of entry then kind of badge cloning? Or is that you try to get close to somebody and close enough to somebody in the cafeteria, clone their badge, and then just rock in?
Yeah, that's it. So we tend not to do like a one day just smash and grab jobs like you've seen like 10 years ago or anything like that. Because you don't have the time to emulate any form of realistic attack, So these things are generally like a couple of days recon or a couple of days breach and stuff like that. So you've got a little bit more time to come up with a solution. So yes, I will attempt to clone your badge. Say you're using, I don't know, iClass, HID iClass with a default key. So Cartech's widely known, and it's been known to be compromised for a good 10 years or something ridiculous.
Right.
Someone put the encryption key on Twitter like a decade ago. Right. If they're using that, for example, I'm going to attempt to clone your card at like a nearby shop, right? There's no reason for me to go in your building and put myself at risk rather than just wait for you to come out of the building and then just clone you.
You've done enough recon that you know who works there now. And maybe I guess, is access control, do you scope enough to know like, oh shit, only this level of employees have access to this building, or you just try to get past it?
So the initial thing is you're trying to get past the threshold, right?
Right.
So you don't know, I don't know you coming out if you've got access to the data center, for example. Right. I might be really lucky.
Right. And you might hit the jackpot right away, like the CTO.
That'd be great. But you might not. You have to assume you don't. All you can see from the outside is I can see you've walked in, you've scanned your badge on that reader. That's all I can tell is 100%. And I know I need to scan that reader to get access.
Yeah.
So I clone your badge and I get access past that first pedestal. So like, for example, the same job last week, we got in. We had persistence on in due to card cloning.
Yeah.
But we didn't have access to the data center. So it's like, okay, well, first things first, find who has access to the data center.
Right.
And we sort of waited outside the data center and luckily saw someone go in. Like, that's not – people don't generally go in data centers. We got lucky in that instance.
Yeah.
And we're like – well, that guy definitely has access.
Right.
So we targeted him. And we so went over
follow,
to enjoy.
You just basically follow him around until you can get close enough. And just
We actually waited for him to go back to his desk and then just went over and asked him for the guest Wi-Fi passwords. It wasn't like asked him for a guest Wi-Fi password while my colleague, because it was like I was attacking from the left, talking to him. My colleague was attacking from the right, cloning his badge, which he'd left on the desk, which was not ideal. But it's those sort of things. It's trying to figure out the next step. It's all about elevating. You're not gonna hack a website and instantly get DA. Generally, it's the next step.
So, talk me through a little bit more about the cloning mechanism, right? Because that's what's in your bag, right, for engagement like this. Because obviously, going into this, you have no idea what you're faced with, right? So, I presume your bag has quite a few tools in it for various kind of attack scenarios, right?
Yeah. So my bag is very specialized towards card cloning because that's what I do. That's my area of expertise. If you were to go over to a black team in America, it may look very different because they tend to do more bypass techniques and like under the door tools and stuff like that.
Right.
That I've been doing this a long time and that generally doesn't work in the UK. Like so my bag won't look the same as that. And it's specialized to where you are. My bag, I mean, you've got the Proxmark, obviously. You spoke to Iceman. Yep. My glass came off, which is why it's yellow because I've stuck it down. I tend to use that. Maybe a Raspberry Pi that I can use to control it, or I can use my phone. I tend to have big readers for different access cards technologies.
For range, I assume.
Yeah, right. Range. This one, for example. I use this one. This one is a Paxson P200. Which currently working on at the moment. And that gets a range of about yay-ish.
Okay.
Which is brilliant. And you can put it in the bag and clone a card through someone's pocket. It's quite simple.
So you basically just have that big antenna hooked up to Proxmark, and then you just need to get about a foot away from the badge and game over.
Yeah, so that particular one won't be hooked up to a Proxmark. That hooked up to it's an ESP32 with some custom coding, which a friend of mine, which is obscenely good. So big shout out to him because he knows who he is. I use that, and then, but it really depends on what the card tech is. But you can use a mixture of different tools to gauge an idea, or at least a good understanding of what the card tech is. You're never going to get it 100% because you don't have access to the card. Like, unless you have the card, you can't 100% tell exactly what it's doing. But you can gain a good idea, right? So it's all about taking the right kit to do the right job, or like just to have every eventuality. So like access cards are generally two frequencies, for example. So you've got LF and HF, 125 kilohertz and 13.56 meg. Now, there's a little tool, which I haven't got it to hand, otherwise I'll show you it. And all you do is you put it on a reader and it induces current into this little tool, right? It doesn't leave logs. It's not actually a card, but all it does is blink a little LED when it's a certain frequency, right?
So you can narrow the search, essentially. Yeah.
Precisely. So you can put that on their reader and instantly, we're not talking there's a delay or anything. You just got to be on the reader, which is in the public area generally because they're on the outside of your buildings.
Yeah.
And you can tell what frequency of card you're using. Because if your reader only accepts HF, you're not going to be using an LF card because it physically won't work. So at that point, you can start dialing down what access cards they're using and then target that one.
Right. Okay. So in most scenarios, as long as you can get close enough, you are game over, essentially, in terms of access.
In most scenarios, yeah. There are systems out there which are crazy good. I'm not going to say that every system can be cloned because they absolutely can't if you've invested into the right things, but they're rare. I'm not going to lie.
It's the Facebook, it's the Microsoft, it's the Googles of the world that have enough sophistication to deploy these.
That's it. Like, it has been honestly a long time since I've seen a card that I couldn't clone in the field.
Right.
But yeah, you generally have to get, we'll say about a foot, depending on what card tech it is, but a foot is your roundabout, distance. And a vast majority of them are like instant time frame. Like we're not talking like as quickly as you can read your card on an actual reader, I can clone your card with my kit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, so Ian, like if you wear your card to like Tesco or whatever, or shop, and I see it, then I can clone it without the risk of going anywhere near your building.
Yeah. And now you have the payload, right? So now usually these are like credit card size badges in most scenarios, right? But you probably then need to disguise your card in case you get caught, right? How do you do that? Do you try to snap a photo of that, how the badge look like, so you can go to the print shop to print out like a sleeve for it, or like how do you actually go about that? Or is that local?
It's a mixture. If you've been really silly, then somebody's put like a really good picture on the internet because people do. And that's where it'll be up in like OSINT. We see it all the time.
Yeah.
People, you generally see people with badges on online, but they're sometimes low quality and you can't always make a forgery based on them. But like some people are like, hey, first day at company X, here's my badge.
Yeah.
And that's just very silly, isn't it? Yeah. Like you can understand why that would be silly. So you make a forgery. Like I like making forgeries. They're quite fun to make because it's a fine art. And I've got a badge printer right there. Or we take a badge printer with us on site and we print the badge in the hotel room. We can confirm it. Like we can get photography on site online. On site. If you didn't put one online because you were smart. So, like, if you go to a nearby shop and you haven't put your badge away, like, I cannot stress enough to, like, the end users, put your badge away. If you don't put your badge away and we get a photo of it, I've got quite good at COVID photography over the years. And if it's on show, I'm probably going to get a picture of it. Right. And then we can make a forgery. And like you say, you just make a forgery. You can either print it to like an RFID card if you want. If you've got a few, like I've got quite a few, but I don't like wasting them. So, but you can just print it to just a normal plastic card and then just put it in front of a card, like an RFID card.
So you just blue tick potentially, and
that's it. So you don't even need. You just need a normal plastic card. Just put it in front of your RFID card, and away you go. Really.
Right.
Once you've got stuff like a lanyard is amazing, you know, especially if they've got like custom lanyards and stuff like that. We see it quite a lot with like the company name down it and stuff like that, which is good and bad. They're really good in your office because it's really good at highlighting who isn't staff. As soon as you wear it outside your office, it's bad. Boy, take it off.
Yeah.
Because it highlights you as a target, and it's also if I get a picture of it, I can make it, and then suddenly I'm trusted. Your badge is your like single biggest token of trust, and it's what I'm going to target. Any information about it I can get, I will.
Right, and you go. How quickly can you get a badge or lanyard printed like that?
An hour. I do it myself.
Oh, really?
So I like the badge. The badge I can print myself. Like, I've got a badge printer, so I don't need to go to you've got to be quite sensitive. Obviously, this is client data, so you can't just go to like another company and say, print this badge for me.
Because
if it's a client name on it, they might just get in contact with them, and that would be really
of course, of course.
Plus, it's client data, so you can't go giving that to everyone.
Yeah.
Lanyards, they can be really good. So I've made my own lanyards before where they had like the logo all the way down, and you can get like DTF transfers and like basically iron them on, and it looks really, really good. Or you can get them custom printed at companies online. They take about a week or so. So that's where like if you see it online,
color at that point because you haven't done the recon fully, I guess.
Yeah. So the color is interesting. So it really depends on what you see on the OSINT, right? So like the one we've done. A while ago, actually, their lanyards were literally the same color as their brand. I'm not going to say what it is, obviously, it's client just in case, but like it was the same color as their brand. And it's quite clearly going to be the same color as their brand. You could see it, very bright color in any of the pictures. So we just went to their website and got the color code of their brand and then just had that printed. And when we were on site, we noticed it was identical. Like we found some in a drawer and it was like, this is literally the same. I think we even went to the same supplier.
Yeah, but it also, like, I mean, it also probably doesn't have to pass too much scrutiny, right? And you probably want to make it look a bit worn out and make it a little bit rugged, right?
Yeah, so that really depends on where, what sort of site you're going to. I tend to, if you're going into a bank and you need to dress in a shirt or something like that, not that you're trying, like, I'm never going to pass as an investment banker. I'm not that sort of guy, but you need to blend in, like we said about earlier. So I might wear a shirt. Now, that's not a very dirty environment. That's not a very, like, rough environment. So I might only wear it down a little bit just so it doesn't look like it's freshly printed.
Yeah.
Or the lanyard. If I'm going to, like, a utilities company and I'm there wearing, you know, high vis and boots and stuff like that because that's what they wear, then I'm going to make it look a little bit rougher because clearly that would be a little bit rougher in that environment than
of course. Than that.
But it's all play to your environment. Like, it's all like you need to emulate your target rather than just trying to get in the building. It's trying to be like there's always the goal for me and my old colleagues and stuff. It's like there's no reason for them to catch you. Like, the only thing they can pick out in the ideal world is the fact you just don't work there and they don't know you. Right. Nothing else should be wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
But you could just have been somebody who started yesterday, that they are just not in the systems.
Right? Yeah, precisely. COVID really helped with that. It was really bad for a lot of things. Obviously, we didn't break into a lot of buildings over COVID because not allowed out of the house. But, like, just post-COVID was a nice little sweet spot for physical COVID entry because you're like, well, I started over COVID. Of course you don't know me. Yeah. I've been working from home for the past 2 years. Like, this is, and there is still an element of that in the world where you say, like, I work remotely and I've just come into the office for a meeting.
Yeah.
And that's why you don't know me. It's good.
Interesting. All right. So let's go back to your bag a bit for a second. Like, what, like, if you were to rebuild your bag, like, how much is custom? How much is open source? Like, what, if you were to start afresh, like, how much would it take to rebuild your bag? Is that, like, super expensive hardware, or is it, like, relatively cheap things?
Okay. Let's have a look. I've got, like, a random bag over here that I used last week. Let's have a look what's in it. Yes. So I've got, like...
Love a bag to show.
Well, yeah, don't go wrong. There's not a lot in it. Like, I think there's a few bits. Like, my office is not tidy. I'm not a tidy mind or a tidy bag. So these are certain things. Now, this may sound really stupid, but clients... like it. So obviously I don't do this illegally. I do this with the respect of a client who sets the engagement rules, right?
Of course.
So this, right? Now what does this look like, Victor?
I presume that's some kind of receiver of sorts. That, I mean, it's a 3D printed case, but I presume it's some kind of receiver.
It's actually literally just a 3D printed box with a wire stuck in it. Like it literally does nothing, but to a client, when you leave that on a desk, it's a bug, right?
Right.
Now, that's what I put in my bag because it's so stupidly obvious that this is a bug, but it's not a bug. So there's actually no risk to the client, and they're a lot more they're a lot happier about me using this than an actual listening device. You get me?
Or plug in a Raspberry Pi to a network.
Yeah, you can plug in a Raspberry Pi or something like that, but some people like broke into an arena and they wanted us to bug the dressing rooms, right? Because they were like, oh, what happens if you can hear or listen to conversations of talent that come through this arena? So obviously a Raspberry Pi doesn't really help too much with that. Yeah. But I put this in a bookcase and suddenly it's been bugged, but not been bugged, you know?
Right. Right.
It sounds really stupid because it's literally just a 3D printer.
Yeah.
I remember a colleague was like, Warren, I need you to make some bugs that are not bugs. I'm like, okay, I can make bugs that are not bugs. I'm just going to print this and stick a bit of red wire in it, and it looks ridiculous and obvious. Right. So that's what I did.
No, but I actually would want to try to do any listening devices would make them look like that.
Yeah, exactly. No one's going to make them look like that. It's so ridiculously obvious that it was
sort of a 70s Bond movie.
Right? It's like I should probably put a little blinky red light on it just to really. So the idea was, like, if a client sees this, say a client goes underneath the desk or whatever we've planted in their data center, and they see this, they should report it because it's so obvious. Now, you can stick, like, there are certain things you can do, like a Raspberry Pi, you plug it in and say, like, IT, do not remove with a big label, and they're probably not going to report that. But this, the objective of this particular bit of kit was it should be reported.
Yeah.
And that was the objective. Then I've got a big old bunch of keys. So, interesting key ring.
Keys or like blank keys or just
just some jiggles, jigglers.
Ah, okay.
So when you go to sort of a pedestal or a confidential waste bin or something like that, you can get them open surprisingly quick with just a jiggler. Now, you can probably just find the key somewhere in the office, but, you know, a jiggler goes a long way.
Yeah.
But, a selection of default keys. So these are just a selection I've had many years now, and I keep on adding to them. I have default keys for, like, cabinets. So if you get into a data center and find a cabinet locked because they're doing it correctly, if you've already got that far, then the game's up anyway. But then I've probably got the key. Or it's like a lift key, and you can stop people calling it if you really want it. I've seen doors where they've got a kill switch on the outside for the access control system. Now, I don't quite get the logic of why they had that, but I had the key for it, and I just went, and it was open. Now, I'm like, what? Why? That clearly went in the report. They got stuff like long-range antennas for the Proxmark, because these are really handy. So Proxmark tool, this thing that we went to earlier, which signed by your boy that you interviewed the other month. Great guy. Big shout-out to him. He's awesome. And so these are, like, long-range antennas for it. So it changes the read range from, like, you know, that to, like, that. Right. You know, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but...
Well, if it's in the bag, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, if it's in a bag or you put it in a parcel and you walk around the parcel or a folder, you've got a bit more maneuverability on that, and you can do an awful lot of things with a Proxmark and a bit of scripting in Lua, and you can do an awful lot of things. So, you know, if I need to, I will. Then you got stuff like... I don't really use this a lot. I bought it because it looked fancy. But you got, like, the Chameleon Ultra, which is a cool bit of kit, and you can load that up with, like, card dumps, and it can emulate loads of cards for you. Tend to not use that too much because there's not really a reason for me to use it. Then I've got, like, a rubber ducky.
Oh, nice. I gotta say, like, yeah.
Yeah, a rubber ducky. So they are really useful. The Hack5 tools are generally pretty good. I don't have an awful lot of them because I don't need them. But this one's great. This one...
What payload do we have on it?
This one pulls a lot of information about your AV, your host name. It was a custom wrote payload by a friend, colleague of mine. And basically, it pulls a lot of information. If your AV's on, your firewall, if it's on, what your domain name is, what your IP address is, all loads of information. And then spits it up to a box that we control.
Okay.
And that's it. That's all it does. And it's like a bit of enumeration to then give to the red team or something. But it's not the most covert of payload because it does stuff like NetSH and whatever. Because that's what it does. And generally, an EDR would catch this.
Right.
What else have we got in here? Antennas. Lots of antennas. Like, obviously, you've got a Wi-Fi adapter, which is... But, yeah, there's a few things, but a lot of what I do is based around the Proxmark or stuff like... Where is it? It's in a bag somewhere. Big reader. Right. Usually big readers. These are big readers and trying to determine what your access card is. Obviously, you've got stuff like the Flipper. You got this. Mine's got a little NARD board on it, which is a present for becoming a father from a very good friend of mine, which is the best present. it's you tend to dial your kit into what your objectives are. And my objectives are generally clone your card because that's how I get it. So a lot of my personal kit is built around that. I know a lot of people have like a lot more bypass tools than I do. I don't have many. I have an under the door tool, and honestly, I've never used it. I've never needed to. So
talk to me about Emil. Let's talk a bit about alternative approaches, like under the door tool. Like how talk a bit about how they work. Is that one extension that you can actually access the door knob and turn them, or how does that?
Yeah, basically, yeah. So it's a. I would get it out, but it would look weird on camera, so I'm not going to. But it's meant to be like a really long bit of thin metal, right? It's got a handle, and on one end, it's got like a long string, effectively, right? And you, the idea is you poke them underneath the door, and you turn it round so that it hooks around a handle on the other side. Right. And it's never you can't use it for like a little turn knob thing, but if you've got like a hook handle, say like. A hotel would be a good example. Then hooks around the handle, and then you pull the string, and the metal sort of like bends and hooks the handle down and opens the handle from the inside.
Nice. Okay. All right. And yeah. Another interesting thing I've seen quite a few times about in commercial environment, you have a lot of doors that are controlled by magnetic locks, right? That's a pretty common thing with sensors and all that, which opens up a whole different attack vector versus a regular lock, right? One of the interesting things I think is the spray can approach to sensors as well. Maybe talk about that because I think that's a clever one.
That's a clever one. Again, you see this a lot of times in America because they have like different laws on like fire exit and stuff like that.
Yeah,
a couple of times in the UK, but it is rare. It is rare in the UK. But effectively, when you walk up to a door internally and it's got like a little sensor and it opens for you, right? We've all seen these sort of doors. But on the way in, you would maybe have to scan to open the door, right? That would be the scenario about what you would want to do. If you get a can of air, like a little spray air duster, and turn it upside down and spray it, it sprays out like white, right? It sprays out like a white mist sort of thing. Yeah, like exactly like that. It sprays out like a white mist. Now, if you stick that little nozzle through the gap in the door upside down and spray it, that white mist that's sprayed into the inside of the door will activate the sensor and will go, oh, there's movement on the inside. I best open this door. Mm. And effectively, it's the most, I love the attack because it's so ridiculous to see.
Yeah.
Especially if you do it in front of a client, they're like, well, you open that door with a can of air.
Right.
It's just like it
then
sits
you can
with
buy it for like a quid if that.
Right. Yeah. So like, if that's your only door for your client, like if that's your only access that you need to get bypassed, then you've got in with, like I say, a quid or like a couple of dollars if you're in America or whatever it is. And you have persistent access because you need to do that every time. Now, the fix for that is obviously out of hours, lock the door, put a bloody key on it. But people don't, do they? Because people are generally lazy.
Yes. Cool. Let's talk more about other tools. I mean, let's talk about lockpicking. I mean, it doesn't sound like that's a very common thing that you do in your engagement, but I mean, obviously for your type of attacks, it is surely a fairly common ping. Do you don't have a lockpick kit at all in your kit?
No, I do. Yeah, I've got lockpicks. I would love to tell you where they currently are. I do have lockpicks that I do use. So I'm not going to pretend to be the best lockpick. I'm not. Like, if you look at lockpicking lawyer, it looks really easy. It's not that easy.
Although he single pins like a complex lock.
Click on three, drop that. Like, he is obscenely talented. Yes. And I want to express that. Now, initial access wise, I'm not going to pick your lock because that's not my thing, right? I'm not that good at it. I don't need to be that good at it because
it
it's not why.
Very suspicious.
Yeah, it looks really weird. How can you explain that away, right? Yeah. If you're caught trying to pick a lock on like the external door, try and explain that away to a security guard. You're not going to. Your engagement is busted at that point.
Yeah.
But that said, I do pick locks, and if I get into the building, generally there's stuff like your confidential waste bin and your pedestals and certain cupboards and stuff like that, where you maybe keep your cards or your lanyards or your uniform or something like that. You may have locked that, and generally they're not a good lock because they like wafer locks or something like, and they're, you could just rake them like within a few seconds and they'll be open. So I don't necessarily need to be a good lockpick because you're not putting good locks on your doors.
Mm, you know? Yeah.
So that's me. But yeah, I do have lockpicks, and I do carry them on a daily, not when I'm not working, because there's no need to carry them to the nearest Tesco, you know, when I'm going shopping. But yeah, I do have lockpicks, and they do get used.
Let's talk a bit about the state of lockpicking, right? Because we've seen, I'm not a good lockpicker by any means, but I do find it fascinating. I do play a little bit with it. But you've seen a lot of development lately in lockpicking with bump keys, kind of at the start of that, I guess, which has been around for a long time. But you have lock guns now are very readily available on like AliExpress and whatnot. Like, how good are these lockpicking guns? And like, maybe speak a bit about that from your colleagues that I'm sure you have exposure to from them.
Yeah, like I've heard they're all right. Like, obviously they're very loud, like like generally quite loud. So I wouldn't use them on a covert job because you can hear them go kah, 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 at the other end of the office. And that's really hard to explain.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I've heard they have their place. They have their place. Obviously you see like the Leashy tools out there at the moment are really good, and they make lock picking a lot easier for certain keys. If you got like your Yale lock, which a lot of people use on their front doors,
that's the one with you have like an angle that you basically I've seen this.
Like, almost like a flat plate, effectively, with like what looks like a key, but it's not a key. And then you've got like a little arm almost, and it goes like at an angle, and it tells you where, like how far to put it in for each one of the pins. So a lot obviously has pins, and you need to pick these pins in order to align them and open the door. And what Alicia does is it tells you where the pins are, and then you can tension a little bit and it will pop open the door. It makes those locks an awful lot easier. Now, I'm not going to say they can pick every single lock, because you've got security pins and other things going on in a lock, make it much better. But yeah, they're really good tools, but they're like £70 a piece for like each different type of lock.
Yeah.
And I just haven't invested in that many, because I haven't needed to, you know?
But it's essentially like doing single pin picking.
Yeah.
But with in easy mode.
Precisely. It's like single pin picking, but like it tells you where the pins are and tells you if you pick them. And it's like, well, yeah, this is brilliant. And it makes life an awful lot easier. I should probably pick some up, but you know, haven't got around to it.
I've had in my basket that, I mean, I know you can buy the good ones. Like, I know, Locking a Lawyer has with his company with, what are they called? Blank on the name.
Covert Instruments.
Yeah. They have some high quality ones, but I've had in my basket at AliExpress a few times, like, let's just get my finger on them or hands on them to see how they are, but I never actually got around to try them out. But they look pretty cool.
Covert Instruments shop. It's a frequented quite a few, but like, oh, shiny, I should probably order something.
Yeah, it's hard not to be tempted by that. Cool. So you mentioned elevators before, and I think that's a really interesting attack vector as well, because I mean getting into the physical building, cool, but it's about elevating access within the building and accessing levels that you're not supposed to be accessing as well, right? Data centers being one of them. In the corporate buildings, they're probably off in the basement that are restricted, right? Let's talk about elevator hacking. Like, we've all seen those things like, oh, if I press all these buttons simultaneously, you can do this. You all read these articles online, like how you bypass elevators, right? Like, I would say 90% of that is bullshit, but like, I'm curious about your reasoning on that.
Yeah, honestly, not my area of expertise. So I don't have a lot of information on it, but I can hypothesize, right? It sounds a lot of bullshit to me. But like, what are you going to gain? Like, what are you going to gain from that, other than going to a floor you may not be able to? But then you just buy a key. Like, I bought the key for the elevators and just go, and it'll unlock it.
So you buy
the
fire brigade key.
And that'll generally let you go to whatever floor you want to. You don't need to hack them. Like, the key's available on eBay, you know? And just do that. It's a lot easier. Take the easiest way out. You don't need to be all fancy. Just buy the key. It's like £3.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, that sounds like an easier path. Yeah. Cool. So I think this episode warrants a bit of conversation about the magic of the high-vis vest, right? And I think that's something that we spoke about before we hit the record button last time. It's just how often do you utilize that? Because obviously you try to blend in, but sometimes posing as a BT engineer or whatever, something like that, can get you into a lot of places as well without people batting an eye.
Yeah, it can. So that's tends to be quite an old school attack nowadays. Mm. So you tend to not have to go, oh, I'm here to inspect your fire extinguishers, or I'm the BT engineer, whatever. Because generally you have like a work permit. Like that's how these people work. They have a work permit. They are allowed to be there. And it's very widely known that BT engineer is going to be there. Like a fire extinguisher inspector will be escorted generally, or like, because you can't get access to everywhere. So you're going to be escorted. So what can you do? Like you're in, like we said earlier, it's not about getting in. Getting in generally isn't the hard bit. I'm not going to lie. Mm. Getting into a building is, I find, the easiest bit. It's getting into the right places in the building that makes it hard. And if you get in, that's where you can like elevate your access and go, okay, well, who do I need to target now? Do I need to social engineer anyone to go, I need to get in there because I, you know, I'm doing a bloody audit or something. I'm doing your audit, but you're already in the building at that point.
Right, right. Okay.
You're from a place of trust. You know, you have to come from a place of trust with anything. Like if I'm going to question like the receptionist, for example, like for some reason I need to question the receptionist. I tend to avoid them, but say on this instance, I need to question them. I'm never going to come from the outside and then go and question her because I'm not trusted.
Guard will be up. Yeah.
You're coming from public area and trying to, you know, ask me potentially sensitive information. I'm going to make sure I come through the barrier from the inside. Hmm. Make sure maybe I make a little bit of noise. Maybe I bang my bang or something like that. So she glances over and sees me coming through this barrier and sees me coming from a place of trust and then go to her. You know, it's all about, there's a whole science to it clearly, but like it's, yes, social engineering is a dark art, really. But
yeah, I mean, I find social engineering one of the most fascinating parts of this whole thing, right? And I mean, yeah. DEFCON has this social engineering village where they do like competition, like on the air, literally, right? So maybe speak a bit like how are you doing social engineering? What's your, how do you usually go about that? What's your strategy generally for social engineering, or if there is one?
So I tend to, I wouldn't say I have a strategy. Like I tend to just be friendly. I know it sounds weird.
Smile gets you a long way.
A smile will get you an awful long way, especially in England. We're very trustworthy and we don't like confrontation.
Yes,
we can play that. Brits in general are very vulnerable to social engineering or certain kinds of social engineering. If nobody's ever going to do anything unless they want to do it, that needs to be, you need to, anything you want to do, anything you want to, anyone you want to compromise, anyone you want to target, they're never going to help you unless they want to help you. Rule number one. About social engineering, you have to make them want to help you before they will help you. Okay, so it's the thing I said about earlier with the guest Wi-Fi that didn't really fit that bill. Like there was no reason for him to want to help me other than him feeling like he is helping me. But like generally, you need to give them a reason to help you, and then you target that. If you're friendly and you smile and you ask them about their day, engage in conversation. So I did a job last year, right? I broke into a building. Bear in mind, at this point, I had full access, right? I had cloned a card, got access to where I needed to be, and just wanted to push and get more access because I'm never quite happy, you know? I'd walked past the receptionist a couple of times. I made sure, like, she had seen me. I'd engage in conversation. I'm not going to say her name, but she was lovely, a really nice lady. And engaged in like, oh, okay, her back was bad and all this sort of stuff. Right? And you build up a rapport with your target before you target them is what I tend to find works a lot better. Yeah. So by this point, we're already, I'm also going to say firm friends, but like she already quite liked me, right? She didn't know what I was really there to do, but she already quite liked me. So then when I went back later on, it was all to build up a rapport. When I went back later on and said, hey, name, you've got access to the access control system over there. Can I jump on that PC? I'm just doing an audit at the moment. Can I jump on that PC? And she was like, oh yeah, absolutely, no problem. Because she already quite likes me. And she, so you have to make her want to do it. And it was all about that. It was all about making her want to help me because she liked me. Okay. And then she's like, oh, do you need me to log in? And I'm like, well, yes, I do. Yes, please. Thank you very much. So she logged into the access control system. It's brilliant. And then she just left me with it. She's like, oh, back in a minute, Warren. I'm just going to go to the toilet. I'm like, oh, no problem at all. This is brilliant. So I just had unfettered access to the access control system and the reception for like 5-10 minutes. I'm like, you realize how much damage I could do and did because it led on to me compromising the entire access control system and dumping the entire database of everyone. Right. So that was fun. But yeah, it's all about, with social engineering, it's all about.
So not only can you elevate your own access, but you, yeah.
I had everyone's access at that point. Yeah, I mean, I could get everywhere. Like, I could get people, I could get places my point of contact couldn't get to, which was quite funny. And he's like, oh, I haven't got access to that room. I was like, well, I have. So it's with social engineering, it's all about building a rapport with your target, right? It's all about making them want to help you.
Right.
And nobody wants to be vulnerable. Right. Nobody wants to be targeted. Nobody wants to do any of that. But like, if you make them your friend, they will just divulge everything, which is makes Brits really vulnerable. Right. That's what I tend to, sounds really harsh. That's what I tend to exploit in people, because I tend to be generally quite friendly to people and people don't really want to help me, which is brilliant because I want them to help me because I'm trying to hack them. And it's fun.
Interesting. Good stuff. All right. So I think let's wrap up with some war stories because I'm sure you have plenty. So let's maybe turn over to war stories of like what you've learned, what you've seen. And yeah, I'm super curious about that.
Yeah. So, right. I'm trying to think. I've broken into about 50 odd buildings or something ridiculous. So there's a few. There's a couple that stand out, right? There was this job. Me and one of my best mates did. And we happened and this is very rare, but the hotel happened to be literally across the road from the target. And that doesn't happen every day. Like, so we're like, well, we need to get in that hotel because we can see the target from our hotel room. This is brilliant. So we did. We got in that hotel. Not the best hotel, right? But it was brilliant for that. And we had like a camera and everything like that propped up at the window. Like we have to do this because this never happens. So we did all that.
Right.
And we were struggling to get in at this point. We're like, okay, we're trying to find a way in, and we kept on getting it was like a massive complex, right? And as soon as you went into the complex, at wrong point of the day, generally someone will question you. We're like, okay, well, we have to try and figure it out. We had a forge, everything like that. Getting a forge wasn't a problem. We knew the access control system by this point. At this point in history, it wasn't easily clonable in the field. It is now, but hindsight, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So at some point during the engagement, we saw this random person just come out of this little door, from the canteen. And we were like, oh my God, they used that door. And at that point, we'd only seen some people use the front door, right? And we're like, oh my God, they used that door. And we're like, that's our way in because that's not the front door. So like, I'm running over there now. And left him there in the hotel room, he videoed it. And then sort of chilled out outside this door and somebody else came out and I got in instantly. I was like, happy days, breach, let's go. Now the fun
tailgating,
bit was
tailgating in, or like you actually
that was a tailgate in. So as soon as somebody opened the door, I tailgated in after them. And I was like, right, I'm in. Made sure you had push button exit because you don't want to get locked in a building. That really sucks. And stuff like that. The next day, we had to do it again, but we had to get persistence. So we divulged this massive plan, and we were like, so mag locks. It was on a mag lock. And if you put like one single piece of duct tape on a mag lock and then let it shut, it feels like it's shut, but with a little bit of force, it'll pop open quite easily. But to a normal person, it feels like it's shut, right? Cause like even just that thickness of a duct tape is enough to reduce the mag force by enough. And it's brilliant. So we tailgate in again, Mm-hmm. I tailgated this one person. My colleague tailgated me behind me. I had the tape on the inside of my coat. And bear in mind, it was lunchtime, so the canteen was full. And I quickly pulled a tape out. There were so many people in this canteen, but we had to do it. We had to get persistence. It was a measured risk at this point. And I quickly slapped this duct tape on the mag lock. Now, because it had been open for too long, the door started to alarm. And it was like, beep, 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 beep. Silence. Silence across the canteen. And we're like, oh, God, what do we do? And me and my colleague were just like, meh. And just laughed it off. And then suddenly everyone was like looking at it going, and just carried on. Sometimes the most simplest things are just like, stupid door, idiot, like, what the hell? But that was it. We got persistence on that door. We came back later that night. We could open that door. That was fine. And then we completely ransacked their office and did what we needed to do. So we got access to, obviously, their domain. We got access to their...
Oh, wow.
One of the objectives was getting to their data center, right? Now, it was a false ceiling, and we didn't have badges at this point. Like, if I did this job now, it'd be a very different job, and I would just clone their badges because I know how to clone their badges. But we didn't at that point. But right. It was a false ceiling, and I'm like, I wonder if the wall goes all the way up. So before I knew it, my colleague had found a ladder. By the way, it was like 8 o'clock at night at this point. He'd found a ladder, and we had a ladder outside the data center just lifting up ceiling tiles. And we're going, oh, what do you know? The ceiling, the wall doesn't go all the way up. And it was sort of like happy days. And there was like a push button exit, which we were trying to reach and stuff like that. That was really good fun. That was a really, really fun job. We got absolutely everywhere, and the client was suitably terrified. It was good fun. Really good fun. What else have I done?
I can imagine.
So I broke into a bank in Amsterdam a few years back, and I had one day. So basically I had one day free in my schedule, and the guy that was leading the job, like, look, I'd rather have you for one day than, it was quite nice of him, it was like, than anyone else for a week, because I trust you. I know what you can do. He's worked me for years. So I was like, okay, I mean, I do what I can. Like, I don't think we're going to get in a day. Like, that's not going to happen. It was a big bank, like a big, well-known bank.
Right.
But I did. I managed to tailgate the whole way in. And because we couldn't clone the badges at this point, again, it was quite a secure system, and arguably it still is quite a secure system, even by today's standards. So I'd say we headed all the way into their office, found that the objective was to get into the stock trading floor, and it was like the tubes, right? It was tubes to get in. I was like, can't tailgate through that. Like, that's not doable. Looked around a little bit, but the objective was basically get in, prove you can get in, and then get out. That was all I needed to do. I didn't need to do anything. I didn't need to go in, getting any network access. It was prove I can get in, prove I can get out, end of. I was like, okay, well, I'll stick to objectives then. So I chilled out in the bathroom for a bit because adrenaline's on high, obviously. And I was like, right, let's give it a go. Let's get out. It was a tailgate on the way out because it wasn't a push button exit. So I was like, okay, well, I've got to try and get out somehow, right? So I went out for this door. Beeped my badge because I had a badge that beeped, it just didn't open the door. And sometimes that's all you need, right? It's just that level of trust. And I was like, then call back to the receptionist. I was like, oh, can you buzz this door open for me? And she's like, who are you? I'm like, I'm Warren from the London branch. And she's like, who are you? Who are you? Before you know it, this is the only time it's really happened, the only time I've ever really come close to getting caught. Before you know it, she was next to me, security guard was next to me. Head of facilities was next to me, and they're all going, who the bloody hell are you? I'm like, oh, I'm Warren. I'm here from the London branch. I'm here for a meeting. And she's like, who are you here for the meeting with? And I was like, I'm going to be honest. It was a Dutch name, and I can't really pronounce it very well. Just play dumb. Sometimes you've got to play dumb. I was like, I can't really pronounce it very well, and I've got no signal up here on my phone. If you can let me downstairs, I'll find out who it is. I'll get them to contact you, and we'll get this straight up. And that was I was like, I just need to get out now. I don't need to tell them who I am, really.
Yeah.
I just need to get out and then for them to be on my side.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, yeah, that sounds all right. And I was like, well, who shall I get them to contact? What's your name? Again, social engineering, put it back onto her, make her feel like the target, make her feel like she's under scrutiny, so they're on the defensive. And she's like, said her name. I was like, right. And then you play stupid, and you're like, as you probably gathered, I'm pretty bad with names, and I'm not going to remember that. Can I take a picture of your badge? And she's like, yeah, okay. So she held her badge open like this in her palm, and I just took a picture of it. And I'm like, well, that was silly. I don't know why you did that to me, but thank you, because now I have a very clear picture of your badge. I can make a very good forgery off of that. And then she's like, sorry for all of this. It's like, sorry, we're just doing our job, which is the best thing to hear as a social engineer. Because you're like, it's okay. I know you're just doing your job. It's okay. And the security guard was like, I'm gonna have to escort you out, unfortunately. I'm like, that's great. In my head, I'm like, this is great, because I can't get out. You're going to let me out. This is brilliant. And he escorted me down with him in the lift. Turns out he used to live in London, all that jazz. We were chatting about, I know a bit of London. I've never lived in London, but I know London. And chatting about London. And he's like, oh, cheers, mate. I was like, oh, I'm just going to go grab a coffee and I'll get him to call you. No problem. And he's like, yeah, no problem. Beeped me out. Never went back. Why would I go back in there now? I'm like, because I'm gone. So it's just like, I'm like, I told my colleague, I was like, yeah, I got in, dude, but like, this is what I see, and tell them the intel, give them the debrief about what happened. I'm like, look, there's tubes. They're using this card tech. It says scan out. The receptionist is really on it. Fair play. And this is what you can do. And he's like, dude, what the hell? And then, yeah, there was work after that. And he was like, oh, I'm going to talk to the client because this is probably not. Yeah. And it changed a little bit, but I was like, oh, that was close. Almost got caught that time. That was the only time I've ever really almost got caught. I've never been caught otherwise. I just sort of. What else have I done? I've done a few. I broke into an arena the other month. That was fun. That was good. Really, really big arena. Mm-hmm. Broke into one of them with a colleague at PTP. We got access everywhere. Like, some of the doors were like hinging off, and we could like push the door and press the push button exit through the gap it made in the door and all that. I'm like, this is bad. That was really good fun. We got on the roof of this arena and everything. It was, yeah, that was really good fun. There's probably too many war stories to really list them all. It feels like I'm just gloating about cool stuff, but yeah, it's a really fun job.
It sounds like it. I guess the last thing I want to wrap up with is, if you were to give advice for somebody building a company or building an office, rather, what's the one thing they should get right, like in terms of like making your life hard?
First and foremost, staff security awareness. That is the biggest thing. Make staff realize that they are part of your security posture. Make staff realize that just taking their badge off when they leave the office is such a huge win for the security of that company. Like, it sounds stupid, but like, simple things like that really impact somebody trying to get in your building from like a persistent way. Like, tailgating is always potentially going to be a problem. Like, you can always get alarms around it. You can like highlight tailgating, but it's security awareness fully that's going to stop it. If somebody tailgates and the alarm goes off, investigate that bloody alarm. Like, don't just let it happen. Don't just laugh about it. That door that went off in my story, like that, that's a security feature on the door that's been open too long, could be tailgated and no one cared. Like, everyone just laughed it off.
Right.
Security awareness, mate. Like, first and foremost, if you like, people should be aware that they have a place in security of a company.
Yeah. And for access control systems, what should people avoid? Let me ask you this. Yeah. What is completely game over in terms of security?
Don't use HID procs. Don't do it. Like, it's, I know it's cheap. Don't do it. It's really, really bad. Largely, Paxton Net 2. You see it everywhere. There's some fundamental issues with that system that mean it can always be cloned, and there's not a lot you can do to stop it. I wouldn't recommend that. There are some really good systems out there. Like, it's not all doom and gloom. And I put a couple of blog posts out. If you want to check PTB's website, whatever, put a couple of blogs there. So this is a whole subject. But like a card, you've got your effectively password on it, a password to the door, like to feel like the password that will open the door is your auth data, right? And how that's secured on the card is what makes it a secure card. Not the card itself, not the technology, it's how you've chosen to secure it on the card. So you can have like HidSEOS and MyFedDesFire, like two of the big players in security field about their really good cards, and they can be configured in an incredibly secure way. Unless you encrypt the data on the card with a known key, right? So like it's like having password as password. Mm. It's like, well, yeah, okay, you've got a password, but I know
it. Like, it sounds like a default credential scenario.
It's exactly that. That default credential is hard-coded to like every, like HID, for example, for HidSEOS, that default credential is hard-coded to like all their readers. So even if you don't know the key, and there's some people that do know the key, and there's some really cool talks at DEF CON that were last year about how they extracted the key. It's not going public, as far as I'm aware. It's never going to go public. But you don't need the key. You just buy a reader that has the key. It's easy.
Right.
So it's, just make sure that the way you make it really good is change that key. That's it. Like, you can change the formatting types and stuff like that of your auth data and make it be like Corp 1000, for example, is one that they like to sell as a security feature. It's not a security feature. It's a management feature about how you manage your keys or how you manage your auth data. The only thing that makes your card secure is your encryption key. Set a custom one that's custom to you and you'll be fine.
Right. Interesting. And I guess one thing to bear in mind is these readers, if you can remove the readers from the wall, you can usually tap into the traffic between the reader and the back end, and it's kind of game over as well, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But that's generally like
it's next level of security.
That's it. Like, yes, you can take a read off the wall, say it's like Wiegand or something like that, which is a very well used protocol for the back end of a reader to the controller, which is usually on the inside of the door somewhere. And you can tap those wires, like you say, and just get the clear text auth data that's been decrypted and everything like that, because your reader knows the encryption key, which I just spoke about, to communicate with the card. But generally, nothing else post that does. It doesn't need to. It's only the reader that needs to talk to the card, right? So if you can tap those wires behind it, you can get it like decrypted and fully clear. Now, the stuff that protects that, obviously, you've got different protocols like OSDP and stuff like that that is better. Or you have like tamper switches on your readers. So if you pull a reader off the wall, it alarms like mad. And somebody, going back to the security awareness, somebody should really investigate that, because somebody's just ripped a reader off the wall. Go and investigate that. There are ways of managing the risk, but it's generally not good if you can get to the wires on the back end of a reader.
Yeah, exactly. So it's always like with all things security, it's finding the weakest link in the entire equation, right?
Precisely. I think I said it on the last episode we did. It's like, hackers are lazy. Like, I'm not going to write some crazy O-Day to hack you. If you've just set the password wrong, like it's easier, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't leave the door. Yeah.
I think that's a great note to end on. Again, thank you so much for coming on the show. Lovely to hear your war stories. It's a fascinating space. We might do a third episode at some point in the future. Just keep on that.
Oh, right.
exactly. So again, thank you so much for coming on the show, Warren. Real much appreciated. Have a good one. Talk to you soon.
You too. See ya.
Cheers.